Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey, everybody. I'm here with professional equestrian photographer Shelley Paulson. Shelley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm super pumped, and I'm about to brag on you. So for the people who live in a cave and may not have heard of you, Shelley's work has been published worldwide, and it can be seen in various magazines, product packaging, marketing collateral for major brands such as Horse Illustrated, Neutrina, SmartPak, the list goes on. So I can't wait to dive into the nuts and bolts of your business, Shelley.
I can't wait to share.
And by the way, thank you for being in Minnesota and having weather similar to Michigan. So when we have people on the show who are from California or Florida and they're like, oh, it's a beautiful sunny day. Whereas in Michigan, we slog through what feels like 6 months of winter. At least I know that you can feel my pain.
Yeah, and it's probably worse here.
That may be a first for this show. Wow.
You haven't had any Canadians then, I guess.
Actually, no, that's true. Well, no, we have. Yes, we have. So there we go.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, first, I really want to give the listening audience a chance to learn about you and your background. So just kind of give us an overview of your background and your past and how you ended up doing what you're doing today.
I would love to. Well, I actually went to college to be an opera singer. Wow. I got my bachelor music degree at the University of Minnesota. But while I was in school, I realized I didn't really want to audition for a living. So I also had some pretty mad skills with Macintosh computers. And I went to work as an Apple technician, but it was before the days of the Apple store. I worked for a reseller. And so I would go around to different businesses and install and fix and upgrade people's Macs. Hmm. I went from there to working for a company that made advertising software. And that's where I started to learn graphic design. And started to play in Photoshop and, you know, learned some pretty dangerous skills. It was about that time that Al Gore invented the internet, and people started to design websites, and I jumped right in on that. And this whole thing is making me sound so old, but I started designing websites using HTML and kind of the old school methods, and websites were just text and graphics and really simple, but hardly anyone knew how to make them. And so I started making websites for people and caught the attention eventually of an ad agency and went to work for them. Long story short, I ended up working for one of the agency's clients as their media and communications director. Part of my job there was to photograph construction projects, really exciting stuff. And so they gave me a camera, computer, and I started taking pictures. And back then, not everybody had a camera or knew how to use a camera. And suddenly everyone's like, well, can you photograph my baby? Can you photograph my wedding? And all of a sudden I became a photographer, and it wasn't really anything I intended, but there I was taking photos and being a horse owner at the exact same time. Of course, one of the first things I turned my camera on was my own horse. I ended up starting my own freelance business doing web design, and then I would use my photography skills to create images for people's websites. In the meantime, photographing more weddings, more babies, more portraits, seniors. Basically, if you had something you wanted photographed, I was like there with my camera. Eventually, I was traveling a lot for weddings and workshops and things, and I was not able to continue to maintain the design business. So I took the leap of faith and shut it down and focused solely on photography. And I wish I could say what year that was. But it was probably around 2010 or 11. And then recently I had a health incident happen where I was no longer able to photograph weddings. So I decided to just shift all my energies over to my equestrian photography. And that was really scary because weddings are kind of this big lump of income. Mm-hmm. And portraits, you have to work a little harder for some of those big lumps of income. And so it was a risk, but it paid off because putting my energy all towards one kind of photography increased that business significantly.
And that's interesting because I've heard it said before, other people have said it even on the show, is that when you focus on the niche that you enjoy working with, you see your profits go up as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you kind of like see people who, I specialize in weddings and babies and this and that, and it's like, no, you don't specialize in anything. And I know that some people are wired to enjoy that more, mm-hmm. but I think from just a marketing perspective, even just having that one very specific thing that you're trying to do and that one audience you're trying to market to really pays off. And, you know, some of my brides were horse people. And so that was always a bonus. But, you know, marketing to brides and couples and then marketing to horse owners, that was two whole different audiences to speak to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then looking at, if you hear me typing, I'm taking notes. Okay. So I'm looking at your background and it looks like you have a very well-rounded history. And, you know, I'm just curious then, has your experience with graphic design, with website design, even with when you were at the ad agency, working with media and communications, I mean, has that helped you in how you run your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've never had to pay anyone to design anything for me. You know, nice. Like mm-hmm. I just open up InDesign or I open up Adobe Illustrator and I make my own logos and my own marketing materials. And I've built my own websites, although my latest photography website, I did have someone help me do some of the coding because the coding side of things has changed so much, even just in the whatever 7 or 8 years that I haven't been doing web design. So I do get a little help on the technical end, but usually not until I've exhausted everything that I know or can Google on the internet. I'm like, Nick, I need you. I can't make this work. I promise I've tried everything. And then he won't get back to me for an hour and I'll go find the answer anyway. So I think he actually delays his answers to me.
So that he's on to you now.
Yeah, he does. And he knows I'm tenacious that way that I can't stand not having the answer. So.
Oh, that's great. Shout out to Nick for being
awesome.
Shout
out to Nick. He's awesome.
So for everyone listening then, they know that you love working with horses. Could you give us kind of are you able to describe a little bit more what your favorite thing is about equestrian photography? And I guess that relationship that you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I came out of the womb loving horses. And I mean, I think that just some little girls are just programmed for that. And thankfully my parents gave me the opportunity to explore that and to ride through my, you know, my mid-childhood, teenage years, all of that. And the first thing I did when I had a real job and enough money to do it was buy a horse. And so I have a very personal relationship with horses and my own horse I've had for 22 years. And so, I have a tremendous amount of empathy for the fact that animals, dogs, horses, cats, and, you know, all the animals we love, they're going to have a shorter life than us, most mm-hmm. likely. And the importance of capturing not just how you look standing next to your horse or sitting with your dog, but how there's a feeling and a connection there, that's just extremely important to me. Horses are, they're different from dogs and cats and a lot of other animals in that they're prey animals. And they are basically like, they're run by a limbic system. They're mostly limbic. And our limbic system is our gut reaction, our mm-hmm. feelings, our the part that's not really very logical. And that's like horses are primarily made up of that. And so they can feel you. You can feel them if you're tuned in that way. And it's really remarkable that way. And that feeling can actually be captured in a photo and conveyed. And I think that was what drew me in. And then just the empathy of wanting, I mean, I would love for every horse owner to have beautiful portraits of them with the horse that they love. Mm-hmm. Because horses are fragile. They can get colic and die within a matter of hours. I mean, it's tragic. Wow. And so, you know, it's not necessarily, oh, my horse is getting up there in years, I should get some pictures. But I think any time is a good time for pictures with your horse. And I've had friends lose horses and wish that they had photos. So there's a lot of empathy and a lot of feelings there. And, you know, for me to show up at somebody's farm and meet all the horses and just explore the relationship that person has with their horse, there's very few things I find more fulfilling.
Mm-hmm. You know, before the show we were chatting and I had mentioned that last year, so it's 2017 now. Wow. So summer 2016 was my first time shooting horses. And actually, years ago, I didn't mention this, for a senior high school session, a portrait session, we did one with horses. So there's that, but I was undercharging.
Yeah.
They basically got it for free. But 2016 was the first time I seriously went out to photograph someone's horse. And that emotional bond that you mentioned, I didn't realize it until I saw it myself. Mm-hmm. Between the owner and her horse. And this was a Frisian. And so that was the main horse that she really wanted me to focus on. He has a lot of attitude. Let me tell you, those Frisian horses.
Yeah.
They stand out.
They're fancy and they know it.
They are. Oh my goodness. It was, so she had almost a couple dozen other horses, none of them Frisians. Mm. And you could tell that he was king of the herd.
Yeah.
I mean, at any time he had a couple mares on each side of him, it was like his posse as they trotted around. It was unbelievable. You know, but he'd walk up to his owner and she just put her hand on his nose and it was just, they'd have this moment, you know, and I was just transfixed after that. So yeah, and I'm sure you know this much more than I do, obviously, because you have way more experience, but capturing that bond is just, it's priceless.
Yeah, it's super special because you can't force it from a horse. You can't force a horse to like you. Mm-hmm. It's something that really needs to be earned. And even from day to day, I have mares, okay? So mm-hmm. I have female horses and they have moods. And just plain and simple, have moods. And there's days where, you know, they're lovey, lovey, lovey. And then there are days when they're like, don't touch me. And I think a lot of that actually has to do with what I carry when I walk in the barn or out to the pasture. Of, do I have good energy? Am I in a peaceful place? And if I'm not in a good place, they're kind of like, oh yeah, I'd rather not deal with you right now. I mean, they're so, so sensitive to all of that. I watched a video yesterday where, and it was a clinician, an equine clinician, and he was talking to this woman about how she feels when she interacts with her horse, and he touched her horse on the neck and he like sent positive connecting thoughts towards that horse just quietly, just by touching and just feeling something internally. Mm-hmm. And that horse turned into him.
Wow.
It was a magical moment. It really kind of changed. Even it just reminded me that I need to just be in a certain place when I work with my horses. And that's when it comes to a photo session too, I do a lot of communication ahead of time about how to prepare. Mm-hmm. And it's not just give your horse a bath and pick out some clothes, but it's make sure he's had a good meal. Make sure it's a relaxing day. Make sure you give him some exercise and don't, you know, make him sit in a stall all day so that he's antsy. And to just remember to relax and have fun, because I've had sessions go bad when people are uptight and then the horse gets uptight and then the person gets more uptight and the horse gets more uptight. And you can imagine how that escalates. And I've had sessions where we've had to just call it and go back another day because mm-hmm. it just wasn't the right day. I mean, they're very sensitive animals.
That's so interesting. You know, one thing I did mention was at that shoot last summer with the Frisian, I did mention to you in the pre-chat that it felt like a therapy session. Mm-hmm. But what I had mentioned was that in the midst of the shoot, so it was about 8 in the morning and I showed up a little nervous. And I, as as we got into it, I calmed down. At one point, yeah. I'm walking through the field and the herd is just, some are running past me and there's some behind me. And I was just, I hit this state of peacefulness. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking along, kind of snapping the occasional photo, and I feel a tickle on my shoulder. And one of the white horses, now they had stayed, you know, kept their distance, of course, in the beginning. They don't know who the heck I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I had come out once before to meet them, but still a new person. But one of the white horses, the mares, had come up to me and was walking with her head over my shoulder. And I hadn't even realized it.
Oh, and that's so sweet.
You know, it's, yeah, it's almost like they could sense that I was peaceful and calm, and they were mm-hmm. peaceful and calm. And just driving away that day, I drove below the speed limit, which like never happened. Like it was just so calm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, they feel that, they're attracted to that. When a horse chooses you, when mm-hmm. they, you know, like that. And I don't know that everyone recognizes it in the moment, how special that is, that, mm. you know, a horse chooses to come up to you and to interact with you. They don't do that lightly. And so it's pretty special.
I like that. A horse choosing yeah. you. Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. So let's segue into the nuts and bolts of running a photography business.
Sure.
And with you, one thing that I really, really like is that you mentioned you like to mentor photographers, mm-hmm. which is great because mentors are great at kind of verbalizing, you know,
yeah.
what needs to be done with a business. Not to put any pressure on you, of course, but right. I'm just curious then, what have you seen photographers struggle with the most when trying to break into? Now, it can be equine photography, but it can also be other types of photography as well. Like, what do they struggle with business-wise?
I think they struggle business-wise. Like, I think most photographers, if I could be extremely generalistic, if that's a phrase, they pick up a camera, start taking pictures, they enjoy it. People start telling them they should open a business. Mm-hmm. And they go, okay. And they don't feel confident, so they don't charge much. Then everybody gets used to not paying much. Mm-hmm. They end up shooting too much for too little and get burned out. And one of two things happens at that point. They either quit or they're forced to learn how to run a business. But the phrase that's been in my mind lately, thinking about the photographers that I mentor and my own journey and my journey lately in focusing on business and marketing, is that most photographers back into running a business. Like they didn't go into it intending, at least the ones I know and have mentored, mm-hmm. they didn't go into it planning to run a business. So they've got this camera and they're creating images, but they don't know really the first thing about marketing and bookkeeping and taxes and, you know, social media. Maybe that's not as hard, but when I get a lot of requests for interviews from students doing projects in school. Hmm. And one of the things they always ask is about education. And I just tell them, go to school for business or marketing. Mm-hmm. Don't go to school for photography. You can learn that. That's not that hard to learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is and it isn't. Depends on what what you want your outcome to be. But if you can't run a business, then you don't get to keep doing this. And I think that's the biggest struggle is, you know, just working backwards from I have a camera and I take pictures to I run a profitable business.
And I don't know how it is with your business, but with mine, it's about 80-20. So 80% business stuff.
Oh.
Marketing. I mean, crunching numbers, client relations, and then 20% actually holding my camera in my hands and taking photos. Is it like yeah. that with you?
In a good month, yeah. You know, like, I'm thinking for the month of April, it might be 10-90, you know, because wow. it's just brown and, you know, it's not, spring hasn't sprung here yet. And so I am just working on the business and doing taxes and, you know, having meetings and making plans and I'm busy, but I'm not busy behind the camera. And this is the other thing is, you know, if people aren't willing to do that 80-20, like, you know, be a business person, be an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, mm-hmm. Then just keep it a hobby. But it's not for the faint of heart either, because, you know, there's customer service and there's, you know, dealing with vendors and products and orders. And I mean, there's just, it's so much, and it's a lot of balls in the air all at the same time, at least for me.
Yeah, same here. Same here. And, you know, I actually went to school for art and design. So, Yeah, and I mean, greatest time ever in college. Yeah. I would go back if I could. I love my school. But I didn't realize how important it was to have any kind of business or marketing education. And so while I was in school, I did not seek it out. I learned plenty about concept and theory. And that's where I first picked up a digital camera. And we also did painting and drawing and 3D modeling. And we did everything. But it wasn't until years after I was out of college and undercharging. And I also did graphic design and web design for a while, freelance, and logo design, and just the business side of it, like it all kind of crashed in.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know. I didn't know any better, you know? I mean, one of my earlier shoots for photography, I was charging like $25 an hour.
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah, you could have made more over at McDonald's.
Right. They had me for like 4 hours that day, and I was bone tired to make $100. Oh, are you kidding me? Right.
Uh-huh.
And it's only taken me 100 and something episodes to admit that, you know? And I don't think I've shared that before.
Oh, I feel like it's professional here. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I had no idea. And when you're in school, especially when you're learning something creative, it's so easy to just focus on the art of it or the creative thing that you're doing.
And what did I hear in a podcast recently? It was like, if you're not comfortable with selling, you should not be in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that describes so many photographers and artists I know. It's scary. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to do in-person sales because I don't like selling. Like, well, why are you in business if you don't like selling? I mean, I don't see it as selling for my gain. I see it as selling of, hey, let's get those images off the hard drive and onto your walls, you know, and into an album or a product somewhere where you can enjoy them every day and make it worthwhile. But it's just, there's this aversion among artists to want to sell, which is so hard. And wouldn't it be amazing to have an art/photography design, some of those courses have required, you know, business 101. Like, we don't have to go into the full, you know, management business degree, but just the basics of how to track your time and how to make invoices and how to do your accounting and QuickBooks and, you know, just the stuff that the basic things that everyone should know that they don't when they come out of a program like that most of the time.
Right. And, you know, we've had people on the show who they'll admit they don't like doing the selling. So they hire someone to sell for them. Like they have a designated salesperson.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great solution too.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought about that. I just don't know how I would do it because I just love working with my clients and you know, giving my opinion about things. And, you know, I think that's why I run a business that's not high volume.
Right.
You know, lower volume, higher price, you know, that higher level of customer service. And, you know, so they have my input all the way along and I'm guiding them through the whole process.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes me feel better because I'm also a lower volume, higher priced person. I mean, my pricing needs work. We'll put it that way, but I've come leaps and bounds. Who doesn't? No.
I think I've changed my price about 10 times this month.
Oh, that makes me feel better. You know, I hear other photographers say like, hey, you know, I've got 5 shoots today and 5 shoots every day this week. And it's just like, that is not me at all. Like multiple shoots every single day. Like I do not want to do 10 sessions in a day. Like I just, ugh. So, I mean, to each their own, of course.
Right,
and it's
about
what fits them. Exactly. And also, you know, like you mentioned, it's different if you're shooting weddings versus smaller portraits, then yeah, you know, there's going to be a difference in the number of bookings and gigs that you get for that. So,
yep, for sure.
Very cool. Well, you mentioned in-person selling and I'm going to ask you about that later because that's a huge thing. That's huge. And the first time I ever did it, I felt like I was going to hurl, literally. Like
I love that. That's great.
Well, I stumbled out of there with a bigger check than I had ever made at one time. But still, it was, teaser, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay.
But for your business, what have you found to be the most effective techniques for getting new clients or leads in your case?
You know, I think word of mouth is huge. Mm-hmm. I had one family that I photographed a couple of times who have led me to, you know, clients every single year because of the kind of writing they do, and they're very connected. They speak well of me. We've actually become personal friends now. And it's, they just shared me with their friends, and also I would tag them in social media, and people would see it that way. I would say, you know, at this point, a lot of it's coming from social media. Also, mm-hmm. Google search. I have really good SEO mm-hmm. on my website, mainly because I've had a website for many, many, many years, and I have a lot of link backs. But I also, you know, I'm smart about my content, but, you know, I have a local tack shop where I've have my work hung, and they have some postcards and an album sitting out that people can look through. And that's definitely brought in some clients. But I would say the number one thing is social media. And that's definitely, as we get a little closer to summer, going to be where I spend my marketing budget for my portrait business, because of how specific I can target my Facebook ads and Instagram ads.
So for the social media that you do, mainly it's Facebook and Instagram?
Yep. I tried Snapchat for a while, but when Instagram stories started, I was like, all right, one too many social medias.
So it can get overwhelming.
It can. I have a Twitter account, but it's mainly just posts from my Instagram account. I feel like my clients really aren't on Twitter. Mm. They're horse people tend to be real visual, and they love to share pictures and videos of their horses. Mm. And so I would say probably number one is Instagram. But Facebook too. I mean, most of my clients are on both. And thankfully now they're all tied together, so I can run one ad and it can go to both places. And I'm definitely going to invest in social media ads this year. I took a course or a class a couple weeks ago about social media marketing, and it gave me some really good ideas and just helped me understand a little bit better how all that works too.
Yeah, we had someone on the show, Andrew Helmich, and he shared an awesome Facebook ad strategy. Hmm. He also runs a photography podcast about business.
Oh,
and so one of his guests.
Check him out.
Yeah, one of his guests had. I'll send you a link.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Just a simple strategy. It was like you spend $30 in a month, and for some people, they're generating dozens of leads.
Oh, that's great.
So not exactly clients or people saying, hey, I want a book, but leads, where you begin that conversation.
Yeah. And I think that's successful right there, because they may not book you right now. They might book you a year from now or whatnot.
Get them in the funnel. Yeah. And also you brought up a huge point where I don't know if you realized it, but you mentioned that you know where your clients are, or where horse people are, I should say.
Yes.
Like where they hang out. And knowing where our potential clients hang out, so to speak, online is huge. Because social media, it seems like there's a new thing every day. Like you mm-hmm. can't keep up with all of it. But just selecting the two or three that would be the most potent for your business is so important.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the challenges for me is there's always a photographer at the horse show.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my clients do some kind of competitive riding, whether it's eventing or hunter jumper or barrel racing or whatnot. There's always an event photographer. And that event photographer has this automatic in with people.
Right.
Because they're there, they're already marketing images to the riders. And I've never had much of an interest in shooting at shows. So mm-hmm. I've had to work harder than some of those that do shows plus portraits to get my name out there. And it was really hard before social media took hold because it was like, well, no, if I'm going to use a photographer, I'm going to use so-and-so because, you know, I know them and I've ordered prints from them before, and there's a comfort level there. So, you know, I think that in the physical, that's where you see hanging out where the horse people are. But in the virtual, that's where I'm working to, you know, continually be putting out content and tagging people and sharing their stories. And I mean, who doesn't want to see a beautiful picture of them and their horse in someone else's Facebook or Instagram feed?
Right, right. And sharing the story, that's huge. That's, I mean, even with the corporate clients that I do, that I shoot here, celebrating their successes.
Yeah.
And even in the simple newsletter that I put out, I like to highlight people who are doing amazing things in the community. Mm. And I hear a lot of photographers say, well, I don't know what I'm going to say. In a newsletter, social media, they kind of, I think it's a mistake to always be promoting yourself. Like, hey, we have special going on, book now. No, you want to focus on the awesomeness of your clients and really tell their stories.
Yeah, because then potential clients can see themselves in it.
Right.
Have you, we talked a little bit before the show about Gary Vaynerchuk, and he's a media, social media guy. He's, people don't know who he is. They need to look him up because he's pretty amazing. He's a little crazy, but he's a little amazing. He's a character, but he has a book out called, or that's been out for a few years, called Jab, 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 Right Hook.
Yeah.
And, you know, his whole thing is the jab is, you know, tell your client's story, you know, share something of value, some, and then right hook is the ask, the I've got a sale going on, book now. Mm-hmm. But if it's, yeah, if we're constantly, I have a sale, I'm booking, I'm almost booked, you better book, you know, all this, all this like salesy stuff all the time, people just tune you out. And right. I think what we're looking for online is those genuine, authentic connections with people. And so not only to put that out in your posts, but also in your interactions, like not just expect everyone to like and comment on your posts, but to do the same to them.
Right. Right. And I think it feels a little more comfortable, too. Even for me, I'm way more comfortable celebrating a client's success rather than trying to be pushy salesy.
Yes. Or talk about myself all the time.
Exactly.
I'm not that great anyway. Well, and it's fun with horse people because they, you know, this person, you know, oh, she's a 6-year-old barrel racer riding full size horses. I mean, there's, there's an interesting story there, and that, you know, that it, people like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Love it. See, this is the stuff I wish I would have known like 10 or 11 years ago when I was in school.
Oh, me too. Or just wish I had known 2 years ago. I don't know. Like, I feel like it's this constant learning curve, you know, of which is good. But then I learn something and I go, oh my gosh, I've been doing that wrong for 5 years.
Right. Now it's, it's a journey, right?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Hence the name of the podcast, Pro Photographer Journey, a constant journey.
Constant journey and constantly reinventing yourself. I mean, that's so I've been really diving into marketing and business learning and podcasts for the past couple of months. And I got to the point where I was a little bit overwhelmed because there the change is happening so fast. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how am I ever going to keep up with all this? I need to be doing Snapchat and stories and live Facebook Live and this and that and the other thing. And it's like this pressure on my chest, you know, like you have to do all of it. And it's I came to the realization that I need to pick the things that really work for me and my goals and my clients and just let the rest of it go. But I also think something I've noticed from some of my colleagues who are struggling is they were so busy the last couple of years that they forgot to market and they forgot to keep up with a lot of this stuff. And I just don't think you can do that anymore. You can't put your head in the sand and hope it's going to go away. It's things are never going to go back to the way they were 3 years ago.
Right, right. Especially with photography.
Forward. Yeah. They're only going to move forward and change. And I have to say, in the context of all of that, that's business. My photography itself, my highest, one of my highest values as a photographer is to create timeless work. I don't follow trends. I don't do trendy editing. I'm really about really clean, authentic. It's not going to look dated in 5 years unless you're wearing weird clothes, you know, that kind of a thing. But the business and the way we do the business and the way we do the marketing, that we've just got to, we have to make the time to stay on top of that. And that's where I love podcasts like this. Like you can turn it on. You've got a drive to the other end of town, put on a podcast, listen while you drive, and before you know it, you're there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Well, earlier we kind of gave a teaser about in-person sales. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that we get back to that. My next question for you, I'm just curious, during an in-person sale, how do you communicate your value and your pricing and your products? And actually, I guess to kind of amend that, that process probably starts before you ever sit down for that actual in-person sale.
Yeah, definitely. It, I send out an investment guide before someone books me, and it has, you know, my session collections and products and whatnot in there. So they already know kind of what things cost or what the investment is before we do the shoot. Mm-hmm. And by the time they get here to order, you know, I think people pretty much know what to expect. And for me, it's almost more of a selection session than an ordering session. I still call it an ordering session to set that expectation that they're going to make the order that day at mm-hmm. that session. Really the purpose of that time together is to narrow down the images, because I have one package that's all the images, my top package. The rest of the packages include a certain number of images that corresponds with a certain size of album. Because I force all my clients to get photo albums, because I just really love the idea of them having a, you know, a long-term keepsake where they can look at all the images or all their favorite images from a session. And mm-hmm. so we sit and I use a software called ProSelect, and we compare mm-hmm. and contrast and choose, and, you know, this one's better than that one. Oh, we like the expression here better. And then we also talk about retouching. And I like being able to go through that with a client, because some clients want things really retouched. Some want it left really natural. And so I'm able to get a feel for what, you know, what they want to look like in the finished product, because I don't retouch my proofs. And they know that as well, that that's, you know, what they see in their proofs is not what the final piece is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And then all my collections include a print credit. So we start from there, and usually they add on to that. Canvases are a big seller for me. I have about 8 of them in my small office. I just hang them everywhere because I just love canvases. And so a lot of people do canvas upgrades because, you know, show what you want to sell. So right. I show canvases, and I have a leather print that's really cool for equestrian photography. And I also really like wood prints, and my clients really like those prints on wood as well, because it just kind of goes, yeah, it goes with that, you know, rustic thing.
Very cool. So I'm sure there's some people that are listening that have never done an in-person sale. Uh-huh. And kind of like I mentioned before, the first time I did it, I was just, I was nauseous. And yeah. I kind of did it late in my photography career, as it was. Like, I should have been doing it years and years ago. And for me, I just kind of stumbled through it. And I remember with the Frisian horse owners, it was that particular one was the biggest in-person sale that I had made.
Wow. And like, that's awesome.
Well, it was like they're the perfect clients. I just kind of stumbled upon the perfect clients mm-hmm. where they have plenty of disposable income, and they're used to working with art galleries. Like, you walk into their house and they have pieces on the wall that they've paid thousands and thousands for. So they have that high expectation. Mm-hmm. So during the sales session, it was almost like they were talking me through it.
Yes.
Which I am so thankful for. But, and since then, I've obviously gotten better. But for those who've never done it before, do you have just like one practical tip that they could take with them into a sales session, or even setting the stage for a sales session? Or like, what's one thing you would kind of advise them to do?
You know, I know I'm not the first person to say this, but I think it's probably the most important thing is, you don't need to be able to afford it. You know, it's, if you think in the mindset of how you spend money, you won't encourage the bigger sales. You know, it sounds so salesy, but, you know, I would be like, oh, a 16x20 canvas is, oh my gosh. And I would think how, you know, I would equate it to, oh, I could buy a lens for that or something, you know, I mean, it's not that expensive, but, you know, I might not be the person who can spend $1,000 on a 30 by 40 framed wood print. Mm-hmm. But my client might be, and that's okay. Like I kind of used to kind of downplay, like I would suggest less expensive things to people. Mm-hmm. And then one day I'm like, why am I doing this? I mean, it's my own discomfort with spending money that was kind of keeping me from just letting people choose what they want and not mm-hmm. freaking out when it's big. Does that make sense?
It does.
Crazy, but
so when you let them choose what they want, did you find that they were choosing the bigger ticket items more often?
Yeah. And sometimes the people that I didn't expect a big order from would be the biggest orders. And, mm-hmm. and the thing is, and we so have to remember that it's not about the physical product. You know, it's not about this piece of canvas stretched around a frame. It's about a photo of them, their horse, them and their horse, whichever, that they couldn't take for themselves.
Right.
And you made for them, and they want that art piece on their wall. They want it to be a wow presentation when somebody walks in their house and looks over their fireplace and sees a 30 by 40, a 24 by 36, even bigger. I've gone bigger. You know, that's, like you said, they would spend that at a gallery. They'd spend more than that at a gallery. Mm-hmm. And so just that, and it's going to sound crazy, but keeping a straight face when people order big things, you know, I think I kind of had shock face the first few times. And now mm-hmm. I'm just like, okay, that sounds good. We're going to add that right here in the shopping cart, and, you know, or whatever in my software. And inside I'm like happy dancing, you know, like, ooh, right. Big sale. But, you know, to a lot of our clients, I mean, yes, this is a luxury item. And I might spend my disposable income differently. And I might not have as much. So, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, with your Frisian clients, they were people with means, and this was how they wanted to invest their money. And those are really, really fun clients to have, because ultimately I would love every single person to have a giant print on their wall.
Right.
And that's why I, always include a print credit, because, you know, even if they just want 2 11 by 14s, mm-hmm. at least they have something on their wall and not just a flash drive full of, you know, ones and zeros. That makes my heart so sad.
Right. Yeah, I've heard it described as doing them a service. So instead of walking into a sales session thinking that you're trying to be salesy, I mean, you want them to buy stuff, but ultimately mm-hmm. view it as, this is a service that you're providing to them, because they're going to have that piece on their wall, hopefully forever.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a disservice to end with the digital file.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I have a passion about that, that I used to give people a discount, because I live 45 minutes now I live about 40 minutes outside of Minneapolis. And it's not uncommon for me to drive an hour, hour and a half sometimes to a session, mm-hmm. which means then for the ordering part, which I do in my home office here, they're going to come that same distance. And I thought people wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. So I used to offer them a discount if they would.
Wow.
And then I realized people actually like this part. You know? I mean, they enjoy sitting down with you and talking through the images and reliving the session and being able to touch and feel the products and be like, oh, I like this album because it's made of leather and it smells like a saddle. And, you know, or I like this one because the images pop off the pages. They're so, so vibrant. And I just feel like it goes back to running a business. This is part of running a photography business. It's not like back in the day you'd have gone to JCPenney's and had your picture taken and they would have let you leave. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. they sit you down. Okay, what are you going to order? You know, this is it's part of running a business. And I feel like there's just this like head in the sand thing with, okay, here's your digital files. Run away.
And then they never get them printed, or they try to send the files out to get printed and it comes out with like a weird greenish cast or
bleh.
And then that's a reflection of your work, especially if they put that on their wall.
It is. And I do kind of get around that a little bit, in that I do I do give them digital files of all the images that go in their album, and that the number of images is, you know, relational to their collection. Mm-hmm. But what I tell them is they're only released to print up to 8x12, and they get a card that says that. And I use Zenfolio for my client galleries, and I have a preview gallery, which is where they get a 5-day preview of their images before their ordering session, and just mark favorites, just so when they get here, like, we're not going through, I'm a heavy shooter, so we're not going through 120 images, you know, we're maybe going through 60 and trying to narrow it down. Mm-hmm. But I set up another gallery after their images are retouched that I call an ordering gallery. And that gallery is, you know, I think I add 20% on top of the cost of printing at MPIX. And so I tell them it's a little bit more than retail prices, mm-hmm. but you can do it from the convenience of your home, and I can guarantee you the color will be exactly the same as everything else I make for you, because I'm calibrated for Miller's, MPIX Pro, MPIX. They're my lab of choice, and so they can order wallets, 4x6s, 5x7, 8x10, all day long. Don't come to me. Just order what you need, you know? And I think that's just, there's an expectation that people have of being able to make those smaller prints, and I just can't in good conscience sell 4x6 for $25. So, mm-hmm. But I mean, they pay well for those digital files. You know, I'm making the money I need to make when they buy those files, and then they're buying the rights to print the small prints. And the other thing is, I tell them, and this is true, I review their order before it goes to the lab when they order through that ordering gallery. Mm. And that way I know if they crop their 8x10, they don't really know how to crop their 8x10, it won't chop their head off, mm-hmm. or their horse's ears off, or something else awkward.
So that would be a tragedy. It really would be.
Yes. And so even in the self-service part of the experience, mm-hmm. I'm there to kind of serve them and make sure that even the stuff they're printing on their own is going to come out right.
Very cool. So, you know, next I'm curious, what's the most common mistake, just in general, that you see new professional photographers make? Or I should say new photographers when they try to make a go of running their own business. Like, what's the most common business mistake that you see them make? And how can they overcome that?
I think what I'm seeing right now the most is people who aren't in a position, like really young. There's so many talented, like 18, 20, 22 year olds out there, you know, starting to build a clientele, putting together a website, using social media to market, but they're still living at home. Mm. They are not having to sustain themselves with their business, and they're charging $200, $250 for the session and all the files, mm-hmm. and don't do an ordering session. So for all their hard work, they're making $200, $250. And what they're going to realize sooner rather than later is if they ever want to move out of mom and dad's basement, they can't charge that little. You just simply cannot make a living charging incredibly low rates and giving people everything for that low rate. I mean, $200 should be a session fee that covers you going out and shooting and coming home. And then on top of that should be products and prints and, mm-hmm. and files. And so I see this short-sightedness of the way people set their rates when they're young, and they don't understand that in order to stay in business, they have to charge more. Mm-hmm. Whether they feel confident to do it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about me again, apparently. Uh-oh. Or the me of years ago.
I mean, I was guilty of it too. You know, I mean, I was doing it while running a different business, and it was just fun money on the side. And mm-hmm. and the problem is everybody, you know, your clientele gets used to paying $200, and then you start raising your prices, and you start losing people. Mm-hmm. Because now there's another 20-something living in their parents' house,
right,
with a new camera. You know, like, it isn't even that these people are going to age out and figure it out and move on and there won't be another one. There's always going to be another one to replace them. And it's, you know, if you can't run it as a business and make a living, you know, you at best you'll just be able to do it as a hobby, which honestly there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think everyone belongs in business with mm-hmm. photography. I think I'm trying to think if it's where I heard it, but it was like, you know, somebody makes you a bracelet and you go, oh, that's a pretty bracelet. And what's the first thing you think? You should open an Etsy shop. You know, so there's this mentality out there of, oh, you have talent. You should make it a business.
Right.
When I, you know, it's almost like you can't have a hobby anymore.
For
people
sure.
People want to turn you into an entrepreneur if you have any kind of talent for anything at all. And I just don't know that that's sustainable in our culture. But social media, the internet, all of that make it so easy.
No, it really does.
Quote unquote, start a business. Yeah.
And then know, it's go ahead.
Well, it's hard for people who are trying to run a business. And I don't want to sound like the grumpy old lady that, you know, has been around a while and those young whippersnappers are taking away all my clients, you know. But it's the reality of, you know, I'm doing this as a business. I rely on this for my income. I mean, I'm diversified. I have other things I'm doing too, but this is a really significant part of it. And when people enter the market at rock bottom prices, you know, they, even if they're not great at what they do, there's people who are going to go with them because of that price. And so not only are they hurting themselves, but they're hurting the industry as well.
That's exactly what I was about to say. It's totally commoditizing the photography industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does a disservice. So if you're undercharging, that affects all of the photographers in your area as
yes.
well. And I mean, I've encountered people where they're like, oh, well, such and so photographer only charges, you know, this much. And I'm like, well, that's their business model. I can't tell you if they're even turning a profit at the end of the day or can cover their expenses. But it's like, I have to be sustainable here, you know?
Yeah, and so many photographers I know are really hurting right now for, you know, people that were running, are running, you know, respectable businesses because it's just the market's so flooded
mm-hmm.
with people that either, you know, don't have the confidence to charge, don't need to charge, don't want to charge, you know, what it should be worth. And it's, you know, it's why I'm definitely shifting my focus more towards commercial work.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of see the writing on the wall. It's been there for my wedding and family and children's portraits, photographer friends, those people, you know, they've been struggling with this situation for years, but it's only now really hitting the equine photography world. And, but, you know, commercial work is certainly a different thing, and you can't just be a hobbyist with a Facebook page to work with, you know, major brands and publications. So kind of, you know, making sure I'm covering myself so I can still be in business 5 years from now.
So tell us a bit about your commercial work.
Well, it's something I'm really wanting to build and focus on. I have a new company that I've just started up called Ride the Sky Media. And my goal for that company is actually content creation for equestrian brands. So in this age of digital media, everything being online, companies need content. They need photos, they need videos, they need fresh content constantly. And so I want to be a part of creating that for equestrian brands. So I've done a couple of shoots for Farnam, and they've used my images in their Ultimate Horse Care Guide, their social media, print ads in major magazines. It's super fun to look at magazines these days. I've also licensed a lot of images to Horse Illustrated in the last year. I have a great relationship with them. My work fits their brand, their aesthetic. That's an important thing, too. Like, I did some spec work with an equestrian brand, and they were looking for something a little more fashion forward. And I'm much more like authentic, real moments. And we just weren't a good fit. And it's fine. I can use the images in my stock photo library that I host, Shelley Paulson Stock. But it wasn't a good fit for doing custom photography for them. And so now what I'm looking for is brands that their aesthetic and my aesthetic go really well together. Because, you know, there's a lot of different styles that different magazines or brands are going to be looking for.
Mm-hmm. I like that you highlighted that you should be familiar with the style of the magazine. So, funny story, years ago I worked for a motorcycle magazine. And choppers, custom choppers. Mm. And the first part of the title was called The Horse.
Oh, funny.
And so I was one of the editors, and I kid you not, we would get semi-regular submissions from people who either wanted to advertise their horse like equine products in the magazine, or they would send photos of their horses. And funny. I stopped even replying after a while. Like, the volume that we had coming in was a lot anyway. But in the beginning, I'm replying like, no, we're actually a chopper magazine. Like, have you ever picked up our magazine and looked in it?
and you
think it'd be such an obvious thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's not. Just do your homework. I'm working. I worked all day yesterday. I'm a print promo. I'm going to print a bunch of small books, and I'm going to pick the equestrian brands that I feel like I would want to work with that match my style, and I'm going to put it in an envelope and put postage on it and mail the thing to people. Because I think, especially in this digital era, you send them an email, it's just going to get lost.
Oh my goodness. So, yeah,
going traditional routes here with this commercial work and trying to, you know, get my work in front of the right people and the right mag, you know, it's not really going out to magazines. It's more like companies and brands, but, it's, you have to do your homework and know who you're submitting to and whether or not they're a good fit.
Absolutely. And the next question I have for you, is there a particular photography resource, a tool, online course, book, whatever, that you would recommend to our listeners to help them improve their photography businesses?
Well, they won't be photography things. One of the biggest podcast website concept that impacted me this year is something called Story Brand by a guy named Donald Miller. And if you go to 5 Minute Marketing Makeover, he gives away like 5 free videos about, or 3, I think it's 3, and then he sends 2 more by email. And it is a radically different way of marketing your business than what 90% of photographers do. And I don't want to give away too much, but he tells you how to make your customer the hero. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, photographers put themselves forth as the hero. Donald Miller was an author. He wrote great books, and he was an excellent storyteller. And he took that into the branding world. And so it's just remarkable stuff. I have listened. He has a podcast called Building a Story Brand, and I've listened to pretty much every episode. And we're talking probably, I don't know, 100 or so. Like, oh, I binged it because I just got so hungry to learn more about how to serve my clients and talk to them in a way that helped them to know that I understand and I empathize with them. Now, Donald's podcast led me to my other favorite podcast, which is called Unemployable. And it's with Brian Clark. And he's all about entrepreneurs and solopreneurs. His every show starts out, you know, it's for people who could get a job, but don't really want one. And so it's all sorts of different entrepreneurial content and from all different, you know, areas of business. And that's what I really love about it is that I feel like when you stay within the photography realm, and you learn from other photographers, and you go to the photography conferences, and you attend photography workshops. It's, like I said earlier, it's kind of incestual. Like, we just all end up kind of talking about the same things, doing it the same way. And I feel like when my friend shared the Story Brand stuff with me, it kicked me off the rails and transferred me to a different track. And I literally took, like, a couple of weeks and just rewrote every website I have. And reconsidered how I think about my customers. Like, there was that whole fiasco with some photographer that was, you know, ranting about a customer on Facebook Live, and I was just like, oh, this is so the opposite of who I want to be and what I want our industry to look like. You know, I want the customer to be elevated, the customer to be the hero of the story, and I'm just the guide. I come alongside and I, you know, tell them how to be great, you know, and and so it's such a different, radically different way of thinking from where the photography industry is right now.
So I'm going to rehash those resources. So we have the podcast called Unemployable by Brian Clark. Mm-hmm. And then we have the other podcast called Building Your Story Brand.
Yep. And Building a Story Brand.
Building a Story Brand. Good. And then we have the 5-minute, so it's 5minutemarketingmakeover.com.
Yep. Five can either be written out or the number.
Perfect. Excellent. I will definitely include those in the show notes for our listeners.
Those have been just incredibly helpful. And then it's led me to reading books and, you know, getting interested in Gary Vaynerchuk. And he's just a genius with social media and marketing. And he's a little bit of a kick in the pants if you need it, especially if you're a millennial.
Oh, for sure. He knows his stuff. He really does.
He does know his stuff, and his heart is good. You know, I think he's a little bit brash, but in the end, he's been a voice for the customer for many years. You know, he wrote the Thank You Economy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's like, you give, you give, you give, you give, and then you ask. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's so important. I think photographers tend to just take and take and take. And, I mean, myself included. So
it's a mindset shift. Yeah,
it is a mindset shift. And it's exciting if you can grab onto it. You know, I mean, for a while I was like, I don't want to tell anybody about StoryBrand. This is my well-kept secret. But I've shared it with people who've been like, oh, that's nice. And that doesn't click with them. And so it's not for everybody. And I know how much work and effort went into it. I would love to eventually do one of his, you know, in person or online workshops, but I just have gleaned everything I can for free.
I'll be checking that out for sure for my own business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's exciting stuff.
Well, my final question for you, but one of the most important, can you tell us where we can find you online?
Well, I would say my main site to start with is shellypaulson.com. And then if you're interested in mentoring, it's growtographer.com. My commercial work is at ridethesky.com. And my stock photo library is shellypaulsonstock.com. And there's Facebook, Shelly Paulson Photography, Instagram, Shelly Paulson Photography. Twitter is Shelly P. And I also have a personal Instagram. It's S. Paulson. And that's just life on the farm and with my crazy dogs and my three cats and you know, the madness of farm life.
Good stuff. You are all over the place.
I am. I know. It sounds a little crazy, and I'm trying to be really focused at the same time.
Well, I mean, all over the place in a good way. Like, you have a lot of presence online, that type of thing.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, it's a lot of work, but it's worth it. It's how business is done these days. And I think that's what I'm really coming to realize, is it's time to embrace it. And move with it, flow with it, find ways to use it that feel authentic and real and comfortable. Not totally comfortable, because honestly, vlogging is an incredibly uncomfortable activity. But it's given me a lot of empathy for anyone else that I put in front of the camera. And in the end, it's pretty fun when people, when it influences people.
Definitely. Well said. Wow. This was an excellent chat. Thank you so much for just letting me pick your brain, Shelly. I really appreciate it.
I really love having my brain picked, honestly.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.